presented to committee over the last two sittings on this matter, the matter ended up in an arbitration approach between Ericsson and MDPS, during which time Vodacom was excluded since there were no contractual relationships between Vodacom and MDPS. Various meetings, various commitments were made in December, and this followed our last sitting in the House on the matter, where we made the commitment to acquire and timber, like, correct me if I'm wrong here, since you were very much party to those meetings, the fact that we would purchase the generators at a market-related price, all right? And that that payment would be effected before December 31, 2018. To my knowledge, and again, I'm going to lean on Temba to agree with the statement or correct it, that payment was effected to MDPS. During the same time, there was a realization that by the attorneys of MDPS, who had been on the matter long before the litigation approach was viewed, was that the arbitration and exchange with our legal counsel, that being the Vodacom legal counsel, that the only route in which to actually bring in all three parties would be through the courts. At the time, around December 15th to December 19th, the request was then made, would we be okay if the matter was then heard in the Durban courts? Vodacom agreed with that and said we were very much comfortable with it, and that obviously we would await the summons. On the 14th of February, actually at the point in time, the counsel for MDPS notified us via email that their counsel was only available as of 15 Jan 2019 due to the December holidays. And so on the 14th of Jan, our counsel sent an email to their legal counsel asking or reminding them that obviously we would like to know when the summons would be filed to us. To date, we still have not got any summons on the particular matter. So we are still waiting. So my understanding is, Chair, is that whilst the litigation approach is viewed favorably by the MDPS Council, to date nothing has been actually, so I'm not sure whether anything had been filed with the Durban courts, because no summons has been filed against us to this point, and that's about as far as I can unfortunately share any information, because that's the extent of the information we actually have on this particular matter.
Sorry, just to add, Chair, during December, Chair, it's only in December when I was brought in again into the MDPS, because you recall, Chair, that on the previous sitting, the stance that all of us took was that since the matter was reported to be on arbitration, we all moved out. And I will recall that I raised that point in the sitting of the committee, that Vodacom's views was that since the matter is in arbitration between Ericsson and MDPS, Vodacom will wait for those outcomes and so on. But in December, Piet called me from MDPS to indicate that Vodacom has not yet made the payment. I facilitated that payment. I think Oliver Krug, I don't know, I think two of us spoke here. I facilitated that, I dropped everything else in ensuring that that commitment, because it's a commitment we made in Parliament. And I called Pete again, have you received the payment? And I think I was joking him to say that, have a nice Christmas. And indeed, he received the payment. And I even spoke to him, I think, a week ago or 2 weeks ago, to because he called me to say there are still challenges. I said, Pete, my view is that, because I thought that once the payment was done, I opted out again because I wanted it to leave to the legal people, the matter, until it has been brought back to us and Linda. That is why, Chair, we ended up moving in speed on Naylor and Movex, because the advice the company gave us was that the matter is on arbitration. And we receive another further report with Linda to say, because of what Linda has explained, the matter is now being taken on litigation. That created a further distance between ourselves and the matter, because we wanted to respect that process to take its own course. And I think, Chair, you are right when you are saying it's one of the lessons. It's something that in the last sitting of the committee, it was a painful thing when the MTPS representatives raised an issue, because even before the arbitration process, you'll recall, Honorable Kruger, personally, we tried our best just to ensure that the representatives of Vodacom were understanding the magnitude of the problem. And it's in that context that sometimes, maybe, personally, maybe I failed, because you push, you try your level best, but when you find that there are barriers like legal processes and so on, you start to move back. It's one lesson, Chair, that, and it's painful what you have raised to say when you leave the committee. When you leave with that pain. It's something indeed that I think it should have been managed better by all of us, MTPS, Vodacom, Ericsson, and I'm saying that with my colleagues here, and I'm putting that broad statement. I think we should have managed it better, all of us. But it ended up overtaking us, taking the legal route. It's in that context that some of us moved back to allow that process. And it will go down, Chair, with that report to say this matter, in my view personally, I think it should have been managed quite differently. And when Honorable Krug continued to engage with us on this matter, he has been raising quite a number of issues. It's my view, Chair, that I'm placing on the committee that I think we should have managed it much better. Thank you, Chair.
I open that to members to make comments. Honorable Krug.
Chair, just about the process, I'll be just going to hear Ericsson first and then Mobile Diesel and then...
Okay, we can hear Ericsson and Mobile Diesel.
Thank you.
Greetings, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, respected audience as well. As you know, we concluded an arbitration agreement 20th of July 2018. Everyone was aware of this, including Vodacom. And maybe just to kind of maybe put a record straight, and I'm speaking under correction. As I understand, there were two agreements, one with Vodacom and one with Ericsson, between MTPS and the two companies, and those agreements continued concurrently. So what happened after the 20th of July 2018 arbitration agreement, the parties have followed the timelines and the process, they filed their pleadings, and at this stage we are going to enter into a pre-trial arbitration process when the arbitration date will be finalized. So that's where we are with the process, Madam Chair.
MTPS. Good day, Honourable Members, Madam Speaker. Thank you for inviting us. Chairperson. I'm not a speaker, I'm just a devoted, loving wife, supporting a husband that has suffered a great injustice. Unfortunately, MTPS's circumstances have not changed. We've now been unemployed for 22 months due to Vodacom and Ericsson not honoring their contract, and they have no intention of honoring their contract, and they know they have no intention of not lying to you. MTPS provided a service to Vodacom since the year 2000, and prior to that, working for a company subcontracting to Vodacom and had a very good working relationship with Vodacom. MTPS started as a one-man business. Vodacom's demands and requirements made us grow and require more equipment, vehicles, staff, forcing us in excessive debt. During the suspension of MTPS, multiple failed systems have come to light. Vodacom and Ericsson were and are aware of them. Both companies are willfully blind and playing the blame game. The same month MTPS was suspended, Ericsson management circulated a statement, and I'm quoting this: "I have come to a personal conclusion, based on all the facts at hand, that the suspension of MTPS from Vodacom is not fair or accurate, is not based on facts, and there are other political activities going on that are not relevant to Ericsson supplying the service in this region. The way of working which resulted in this issue is and has been across three suppliers in this region, yet for MTPS, is the only one being targeted. But still Ericsson and Vodacom stopped us from working. Emails will confirm what I just said. In the last few months, our staff and families have gone through hell. We have even received death threats on a WhatsApp group from senior personnel made death threats with unlicensed firearms. A concerned staff member on this WhatsApp group took screenshots and sent it to us. We like killing oaks. We have a voice recording from Carly Mulonfo clearly telling us of all diesel discrepancies after sitting with MDPS and going through this diesel. The record was also played to KZN management and also to Parliament. This information and many more inaccuracies were brought under the attention of Vodacom KZN, Vodacom Risk, Mr. Temba, and Mr. Delport. Mr. Khalil himself knew that the monitoring system MARS is inaccurate and that the germs would be the monitoring system that was meant to be used according to the contract and would have been monitored by Vodacom and Ericsson staff. But this was never installed. Yes, in the contract, and yes, email stating that these things would be installed. MDPS staff were given diesel cards with wrong information printed on the cards. Insufficient literage, no training on these cards. Vodacom ran out of funds on their diesel cards, mismanagement. Only one transaction per day was allowed after these cards started working manually, and only 650 litres allowed per transaction per day. This is not efficient to run Vodacom's generators. Vodacom and Ericsson were all aware of this problem. Here is WhatsApp groups for Vodacom and Ericsson's personnel and subcontractors, notifying them of the problems they had with the cards, notifying subcontractors that there's no funds. We are victims to a failed system, wrongfully accused. What seems to be more alarming is the extent both parties will go to make us guilty. We have proof that they tampered with our diesel report and shared this tampered report amongst each other. This is disclosed for arbitration. Ericsson has still not paid us for some invoices. One invoice is now part of our arbitration claim, But another invoice was for work rendered in 2016. We have queried this invoice multiple times. We have been told by Ericsson to take this to Parliament. Information of this as well. Vodacom and Ericsson have not only succeeded in ruining MDPS and our credibility, but they have caused a huge ripple effect in other small businesses that we supported. Vodacom lied to Parliament repeatedly. In the last parliamentary meeting, Mr. Kevin Khalil himself told Parliament that MDPS told Vodacom that the diesel dispute is between us and Ericsson, and Vodacom should stay out of this. This is not the truth. Emails will prove, Mr. Khalil's email will prove, in fact, that it's Vodacom that chose to not be part of this. Mr. Temba said he had a business proposal for MDPS, and we would meet before parliamentary meeting last year in Cape Town with him and Mr. Dalport. That did not happen, and when we did have a five-minute chance to speak to Mr. Dalport during lunch break, he knew nothing about Temba's proposals and said that he had no authority to make these proposals. This was all the stalling tactics Vodacom to keep us quiet and getting past another parliamentary meeting was false hope, another stalling game. After Parliament that evening, we did have a meeting with Mr. Temba, where he again told us about these three proposals, but he still wanted to meet with Mr. Dalport and would get back to us in the next few days. Here are the WhatsApps asking Mr. Temba about these business proposals. When's it going to happen? Has he spoken? What's going on? Vodacom KZN, Vodacom head office has now blocked us three times from getting work. We were offered work for the Eastern Cape just after a parliamentary meeting last year by a Vodacom representative. After numerous calls from the Eastern Cape asking us to start working, suddenly the excuse was we're going to insource. This happened after asking Mr. Dalport to give us permission to please start working, once again stopped by Vodacom. Mr. Temba was also notified of the relevant person to contact at the Eastern Cape, which offered us this work. When Mobix took over from Ericsson, all the subcontractors were told that they would go over to the new company. Vodacom KZN in management was responsible for stopping and blocking that again. We have a WhatsApp to also confirm this. We have been contacted by Mobix on different occasions to work for Vodacom, but Vodacom has to give permission to Mobix for us to work, and every opportunity has been stopped. We have proof of everything. All the accusations that have been made over the months. Stephen Barlow accused MDPS, one of multiple accusings, sorry, that's probably not the right word, of things we've done wrong. Disconnecting tracking. Vodacom's tracking report clearly states and shows that generator tracking never worked, some for years. Not just MDPS's tracking, but all contractors' tracking wasn't working. Tracking is also not our responsibility for the contractors because this is a Vodacom asset. The investigator from Ericsson, Jerome Jones, and his 17 accusations against us. Here is my book. All 17 accusations, all false. I did this myself, not my lawyer, nobody. Me, the wife. Me. Emails, affidavits, WhatsApps. Nobody is interested in those. Do not let them fool you again with promises that they are willing to help. Ericsson is even retrenching their own people, their own South African staff, and replacing them with foreigners. I've got emails to prove that too. We would like to take this opportunity to thank Parliament for intervening with sales of generators, though the generators wasn't the main problem we had. It was something that Vodacom decided they will do. We will take the... That's not even the problem. We would have to... But if you didn't intervene, as Mr. Khalil's email stated, that payment would be between 6 and 7 months. This was also sent to Parliament. However, this was $500,000 less than what we wanted for these generators. MDPS has sold work vehicles with a huge shortfall. Had the generators gone for a price that we wanted, this could have compensated for the shortfall. But now it's left us with more debt. Debt that we've accumulated to do work for 20 years for Vodacom. Please, Madam Speaker, do not let Vodacom and Ericsson come with pretty little speeches and promises. They have done nothing but lie. I would like to leave Vodacom and Ericsson with these thoughts. What your wrongful accusations and lies have caused is like a long life sentence. This has been apparent in trying to find work again. Once your name and your reputation is damaged, doors start closing. You have not managed to ruin MDPS. You've managed to ruin our lives. MDPS's problem started with Vodacom Ericsson KZN management demanding financial help backhand. And when MDPS refused, we were told this will cost you. Why was our cards issued incorrectly with, and nobody else's cards were incorrect? Isn't that just strange? All our problems started at that point. The other contractors being also jealousy and greed. This problem is also previously reported by other contractors to Parliament, with KZN's senior personnel demanding backhands. Ericsson's also aware of these problems. Not Vodacom or Ericsson acted according to their contract. The contract doesn't leave for suspension, madam. We should have continued working, and this issue should have been resolved. If it couldn't be resolved, it would have gone to a legal department or legally would have been sorted. But we should have kept on working. There was no fair investigation. Documents and reports were withheld from us. No transparency. Vodacom and Ericsson did not want to see the truth. MDPS is not the only company that has suffered at the hand of these bullies. Corporates do think that the individuals cannot take them on, and they bargain on dragging out the legal process in the hope of suffocating a small business, exhausting them from funds. Well done, you've actually done very well. Thus, we will disappear. Unfortunately for you, we will not disappear, and though there's a bulldog, God has given me red hair, and red hair is a clear sign to the world, be flippant careful. We will not stop fighting. We will fight and we will prove our innocence. No death threats, no tampering of evidence, no stolen tactics, no bullying will scare us, madam. We will fight because justice will prevail. Once again, I'm not allowed to say Madam Speaker, Chair Lady, Chairperson. Thank you for this opportunity of sharing our stories. Thank you for this amazing experience of going through this and telling you what really goes on and what the individual really suffers. We wish you and your committee truly the best in finding ways to resolve these so that the only option for us wouldn't be to arbitrate or litigate. Linda, Vodacom was actually the one that said we should litigate and not arbitrate. It was their choice. The only reason why we are going the legal route is because we've been dragged along the whole process. First we got a rollback contract saying that we would start last year in February when Ericsson exited. Then we were promised of further work, Mr. 10x3 proposals, so it's gone on. So we've actually been strung along with false hope. And after the Eastern Cape contacted us, we realized that we might be blindsided by this whole event and that if we don't go legal, we will eventually reach a point where we've got no fighting battle or no funds. And that is why we've approached the legal route. I look forward to seeing you guys in arbitration, and I look forward to letting you know that you can have a comfortable and good life knowing that we will succeed, madam. And thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. Thank you. Thanks.
Honorable Chan, followed by Honorable Mabasa, Honorable Kruger.
It's a very different story to the one we heard regarding NELA trading, which seems to have ended amicably. And I can see that your expressions Linda and Temba are very different from what they were an hour ago. Because actually, we have no reason to dispute what we're being told by mobile diesel power systems. I don't believe that these people would be fighting this action if they didn't absolutely believe that they were in the right. Why would they be going to this enormous expense and emotional turmoil if they didn't believe that they had a case? So I think that you have some questions to answer. And I think Ericsson has some questions to answer. And I think in particular, why does Mr. Delport seem to rule the roost at Vodacom? Why does Mr. Delport seem to be able to dictate terms when you have had specific instructions from your CEO to take control of this issue of relationships with suppliers and their suppliers? So I think that a conversation with your CEO is overdue on this matter. I'm sure that there are issues relating to the actual nature of the accusation of the tampering with diesel records. I mean, these are criminal acts. You know, these are acts that should be. I mean, the fact that these things are not top headlines in the newspapers, you know, like all the other things we're learning about, is because it doesn't sort of have the sexiness, you know, of the Guptas or the Eskoms. But actually, it's an example of problems that are being covered up in corporate South Africa that we need to know about as citizens, not just as the committee. So I really am shocked to hear the fact that this has been going on for 22 months. I mean, we first met you how long ago it was? I think it was in the old assembly chamber, you know, 2 years ago, virtually. But this is still going on and on and on. And as Heidi says, it's the deep pockets of corporate that allow this to happen. The determination of mobile diesel power systems is evident. So let's hear from your side.
Thank you very much, colleague chair. I thought it would give us a better perspective to hear more from the gentleman from Ericsson, more than the few words that he articulated. You know, it will do the meeting more good. I just missed his name. Mr.
It's Mohammed Issa, thanks.
Mohammed Issa.
That is correct.
Okay, so that's what I'm asking for through you, colleague chair.
Honorable Kruger.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, just two things. I think the fact that Vodacom punish the company, the small business, and it's all about diesel theft, I'm surprised that there was no case open against them. You know, if I steal something, then the company will take me may open a case, and then the courts will decide if I'm guilty or not guilty. So it seems like Vodacom just decided they're guilty, and they use false reports to decide that. That's the first point. The second point is, Heidi did mention the business proposal of Temba, and I want to concur about it. Temba also discussed it with me. As a matter of fact, I was very happy to hear about the business proposal, and I thought that will be a very good solution to their problem. And, you know, the whole business proposal was so that Vodacom can get people to buy the business, and then Heidi and them will, and Piet, will they sort of mentor them. And the whole thing was, as a matter of fact, me and Temba were sitting in my own office discussing this, and we were all happy about it. And then it just disappeared. On one stage, I had a feeling that Pierre don't believe me, you know, that I just use it as a story. So, yes, there was definitely business proposal. I don't know who stopped it. According to some rumors that it's again Mr. Delport or something. And I mean, if one person can have an influence on somebody else's life, I can't see him being a manager of a big corporate. So, yes, Madam Chair, it's a very sad story. Every time I hear the story or read through it, I also got the file. I went through this file, and every time I read through this file, I start crying. Of course, it's not the way to go. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Honourable Paba, followed by Honourable Tim.
No, Chair, I think mine would be, I don't know what will be the response of Vodacom, but this parliament and in our country, we have had big names thinking they could manipulate and not do fair or be of developmental to society and other companies or small business, and they could not survive. So I don't know maybe if this weight will be carried by Vodacom, or you are able to single out the truth, because as the committee, maybe we have not arrived at the point to discuss whether whom to name and shame and whom to blackmail. I don't know. We are about to conclude our legacy report here. Should Vodacom be mentioned as the worst? And I wish Honorable Kruger, we could know the case numbers. If this is crime, so that because we don't stand with corruption and we don't stand with any either being doing injustice to anyone, not in our name, not in the constitution, not in the practice of this parliament. So I may not know as yet what to preempt the response of Vodacom, but I think you must find us ready to stand with those that are being oppressed or not being assisted correctly. Not this parliament, it's very clear.
No, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think I'll be echoing your words when you said, let Vodacom deal with rotten apples. Because we can't be having one person's name being mentioned and thereafter there'll be no action in terms of dealing with that particular individual. When there was like a direction, maybe, you know, that maybe we were going to have a good story as per the previous presentation on Nila trading and, you know, Mobex, and now it's a story that has made Chairperson to be really emotional. And Chair, it was also difficult for me maybe to also come in, because when I'm facing that direction, and when I saw them, you know, the way they are affected, indeed, it's affecting, you know. And if there'll be people who'll be affecting people in that manner, and when in the presentation, when there is also an element of corruption that is there, because they are not given business, because they are not doing, you know, they are expected to be part of corruption, and so when they refused, because she said it seems they were supposed to commit themselves, you know, on some financial issues, you know, because they did not give, then they will not get business. If that's also the case,
I think that needs to be investigated, and Chairperson, I will also be happy even if we are not there in the sixth parliament, but the report should be there that indeed an investigation was done and these are the people that were doing this, frustrating people because of their greed, you know, when they were supposed to deliver to the people of South Africa and they did not, you know. So I would request that maybe Chairperson that they go deeper and come out with facts, you know. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I also would want to I'll give you an opportunity to speak. I just want to point out what I see happening here. I'll start with Vodacom. Vodacom, you close your eyes and your ears when certain individuals' names are mentioned in actions of corruption. You close your eyes and your ears when certain names within Vodacom are mentioned on how they treat small businesses. To you, it may not be an issue to call a company our 2 cents friends. Something that was on an email which was mistakenly sent to the persons who were referred to as 2 cents friends. To you, it may not mean a lot. To us, it means a lot. Because it puts those people in a particular category of how they are treated, and there are no consequences in Vodacom for people who are doing that. Instead, Vodacom would come here having massaged those people, but the behavior and the practice continues. You are responsible for small business development program, Linda. It should be in your interest, as it is in my interest and this portfolio committee, to make sure that people who do those things face the consequences. But we have not heard anything from Vodacom that says, this is how we dealt with these people. There are names that are mentioned in Vodacom who would have tampered with the report about MDPS. Common names keep coming up. But there is nothing in your report that says we are putting these people on the spot and we want to clean our reputation. We want to look clean. But instead, you come here and protect those people. There's nothing that you do. You are responsible for SMME development. Please. You are just like me sitting here, and you are just like all these members seated here. You are just like the Department of Small Business Development. It's your responsibility to make those managers in Vodacom and to make Vodacom Group CEO to take action against those people. But you also, Vodacom, allow Ericsson to get away with meth. They come and present arbitration. They know it's a process that is going to prolong, and a matter that is in arbitration shuts the mouth of Parliament and the avenue of Parliament. So Parliament must keep quiet and not engage on this matter, and you allow that process to happen. When you were sitting with a report that had been tampered with about mobile diesel supply, when are you going to act on the fact that the report was tampered with as an internal matter? Why should it go to arbitration? Why don't you take on the managers who come and say it was a mistake to do 1, 2, 3, 4, and then point to them that that mistake has resulted in this company having to suffer? What do you think the country would be if, after all the noise that had been made about state capture and corruption, the president just kept quiet and not appointed the Zondo Commission? Why don't you investigate those things? Why all your investigations are finding your employees having not done anything wrong, when you, Linda, is there to actually ensure that small businesses are treated fairly by Vodacom? I want to turn now to Ericsson. Why, Mr. Makofane, are you not behaving like Teba? Mr. Tembakina, why don't we see a difference between you and the management? Because your responsibility is to make Ericsson understand how Parliament works, how government works, and you have to indoctrinate those people and make them change and understand policies of the country and align their practices and policies to the policies of the country. Why are you not behaving like this? Because here we can see a difference between Mr. Kinan and Mr. Makofane in dealing with the management in this company. You come here and keep quiet, but you are the stakeholder manager. You allow the management to speak. And promote wrong things. Why don't we see a difference? You stepping in to say, I am stepping in now. I understand that the playing field is not the same. I understand the policies of the government. I understand the history of this country. I understand where we are taking this country to. And I am going to educate. Management within Ericsson. Ericsson has applied delaying tactics, arbitration,
bring in advocates to, in Pietermaritzburg, to address both NILA and MDPS in front of you, Mr. Makofane. And you did not ask for any adjournment for you to speak to the management in Ericsson, as Mr. Kinana would do with the management in Vodacom. Now, I really don't know what is the way forward. Is it arbitration? Is it litigation? I can't say. But what I see, arbitration aimed at, is to shut the mouth of Parliament. That is what I see the arbitration route taking these people through. The litigation process, again, is a process that is saying, we know you won't afford legal. But I also want to raise this issue that it's not only these small companies that have been ridiculed. Parliament has also been ridiculed. What do you think Parliament will do? We should get rid of NILA, we should get rid of MDPS, because they went to Parliament and they thought that they are clever. So all that is happening in Vodacom, Mr. Kinana, is to get rid of NILA and punish NILA for having come to Parliament, and to also punish MDPS so that no small companies will ever come to Parliament and report what big companies are doing to them. Another observation, it's not only these companies that came. After these companies came, other small companies came. Bonisa came, another company came, and all of a sudden, Bonisa was jittery. She would not be available for meetings. She would write letters, the matter is resolved. And we know that she has become friends with Mr. Delport. And she goes to these companies. She came here complaining. She's today captured. And then she goes to these companies to say to them, stop harassing the big companies because you are not going to get work from them. Some of the people who came here have become traitors, convincing small companies that you should not come to Parliament. If you come to Parliament, no one wants to hear about you, NILA, in Vodacom. You will be like MDPS. MDPS is out of business. MDPS is not out of business because MDPS has been found by a court of law having stolen diesel. No. MDPS is out of business because a report was tampered with which exonerated MDPS, and it was then changed to reflect that MDPS is wrong. And the result of that was that MDPS should be out of business because MDPS had refused to be part of corruption by certain managers. So, the question about all this, why do you close your eyes and ears when there are pointers of corruption involving certain managers within Vodacom and certain former staff members of Vodacom who are then absorbed by companies that you outsource management of maintenance to. And why don't you trace a record of how those people left the professions that they were doing? How a person who is fired from a teaching profession for having mismanaged funds gets involved in Vodacom, is employed, and then when Vodacom outsources, that person goes out to be the manager. And then when small businesses come and cry and say, this person is actually asking us to give him or money in order for us to have job within, to get contracts from Vodacom, you close your eyes and your ears and you say, you have done an investigation, this person is clean. Why are you doing that? There is a forensic audit in the Department of Small Business, which came as a result of the observations of the portfolio committee on oversight when we were going out to look at what the department would come here and report as having done and what we find on the ground. And then based on that, we asked that the Office of the Auditor General should do a forensic investigation. And the Office of the Auditor General was here last week to say, we have concluded. We have findings, but we have given that report to the minister and the accounting officer to respond. There was action as a result of what the portfolio committee alerted the Office of the Auditor General as red light. We went on oversight and we suspected that there was fraud and corruption between CIFA and other people who were applying. We made a recommendation that CIFA must do the internal investigation. We are also going to refer that to the department must do that investigation. CIFA immediately conducted an investigation and came here to say to us, yes, you were correct. These are the actions that we have taken against the bad apples within CIFA. The department, on the other hand, which provides oversight to CIFA, did not jump in the manner CIFA jumped, which is the question that we are asking. Why Vodacom doesn't react when they are being told that there are bad apples within your company? Why are they risking their reputation protecting bad apples? Do you think that people will not see through what you come and present here? The same applies to Ericsson. You contradict each other. Ericsson would say, we are not responsible for what was agreed upon between Vodacom and these people before we were given this contract. And you come here and say to us, no, those that we subcontract to manage them are bound by our policy. You are contradicting each other. And when Ericsson was saying in Pietermaritzburg that they were not bound by the contracts that existed between Vodacom and NILA and MDPS, they had to start all over again and negotiate. You allow them to do so. The same is applying with Mobex. Mobex is new. NILA has been working for you for more than 10 years, but you are allowing Mobex to dictate. You are not telling MOBEX that this is how we work with this company. You allow MOBEX to have these people, NILA, for more than a year without a contract, but you pay MOBEX. And MOBEX doesn't go to the site. We've seen photos of some of those sites with tall grass. Putting employees of these companies at risk. And MOBEX sitting in the office and only managing and getting reports and invoicing because they are managing. They are not on the ground. And where they see an opportunity of what they can take from them, they then put guidelines for the contract which allow MOBEX to make more money from taking what was done by this small company. Is that what you are responsible for in Vodacom, Linda? To allow big corporates to work with middlemen companies to kill small businesses? What transformation are you talking about if that is what is happening? How do you want us to view Vodacom as Parliament? When is Vodacom going to get rid of bad apples?
Thank you, Chair. If I can just, I'll have Temba speak to most of the matters, and he's a bit closer, and his name got mentioned 500 times. And mine was silent except for the chair.
I'm mentioning you because of your position.
Yeah. No, I'm aware of that, Chair.
You are just like me.
Yeah.
So the two of us should be working very closely and ensuring that how we see things should be the same way that you see things.
I just want to clarify a statement Honourable Chance made about the fact of our mandate from Shamil Jussup. Our mandate was to address and resolve the NILA MOBEX matter. At no stage did it expand to MDPS matter. From where I sit, that matter was excluded because we were not allowed to be involved due to the approach that was being taken. That being said, Chair, I love it when people challenge me, and I love it when people question how serious I am in terms of driving black economic empowerment, but more importantly, doing meaningful transformation of this economy. So I take that exceptionally serious, to the point that I would have preferred to have gone out, phoned my chief executive officer and said, you and I are going to have a talk now. On the MDP PMS, and sorry, before I actually go there, I deal with every component of black economic empowerment, from ownership to employment to management to the board. Temba will actually vouch in terms of saying how many times he has phoned me and said, why are you not attacking X, Y, and Z processes? And then I go, I have. And I bring him into trust, and I explain things. When an SMME contacts my office on a direct basis, I handle it, and I'm involved in it until it, whatever the matter is addressed properly. The MDPS matter has never, ever laid on my table, albeit not necessary an excuse. But I think, Chair, to be honest, in the same way as I surrendered a birthday weekend, dealt with the Nila Mobax process within a two-day period to get to a point where we are now. I think if the MDPS matter had landed on my table in the same way, it would have been dealt with in the same with the same urgency.
Yes, sorry, there's a hand there.
Madam Chair. I just want to understand one thing, if I'm stand to be corrected here. There was a statement saying during December time, there was money that has been paid to MTPSP. Is that correct? Is that correct?
Correct, yes.
What was your position on that? When you paid them, what was the position of Vodacom in this matter? Thank you.
Chair, on that matter, I think Temba is very much placed to answer that. I just wanted to bring clarity to a statement made in terms of what my mandate was.
Can I dispute that so that we don't waste time on that? You have been part of the delegation of Vodacom. So the issue of the matter landing on your desk doesn't come in here. That issue doesn't come in. You were aware of what was happening. You allowed Ericsson to take that route of arbitration in order to shut the mouth of the portfolio committee instead of standing up for small businesses. It doesn't have to be a letter from MDPS landing on your desk. It has to be your understanding and the interpretation of the issues that were discussed in Parliament in your presence, raised by MDPS and NILA. The reason for us not to engage your office and Temba's office in the manner we did with NILA was because of the strategy employed by Ericsson, who brought an advocate in a meeting which was held in Pietermaritzburg, attended by myself and Honorable Kruger as delegated by this committee. That process that strategy which was employed by Ericsson closed this avenue, which was going to enable you to look deeper into what was happening, and you allowed that process to take place. My committee was then put in a situation where it can't process these matters because they are on arbitration. So you can't say that you did not deal with this matter because it did not come at your desk. Even the NILA issue didn't come at your desk. It came at the chairperson's desk.
Are you your chair? And at this juncture, I am going to admit to my error. I think I'm very adult enough to actually do that. I'm not going to sit here and purport to be some miracle angel when I'm not. So I humbly take on the position that the chair has actually tabled. And I think, you know, sometimes when is so focused on everything else that you forget to look where you should be looking. I accept that, and I accept the responsibility. I remember 2.5 years ago, you actually looking me in the eye and saying, Linda, I know you guys are doing fantastic work, but that's not what I'm challenging you on. The problem was, I didn't quite look into that message as I should have. So, and which kind of leaves me with a bit of a bitter taste in terms of the fact that I'm partly responsible for an unfinished matter that is sitting on your plate at the end of the fifth parliament. And I have to apologize for it, because I think if I had taken a step back on that day, I would have realized what you were actually addressing. I think I was too focused at the point in time on defending all my other work instead of looking at the point at demand. And I think I'll end there for Timber on this.
Do you want to come in?
Sure.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think I will take the entire bite. Chair, my view, I want to start on the statement I made at the beginning, Chair. My view is that this is one of the matters that, from where I'm sitting, Chair, we should have managed it better. There is no other explanation, Chair. We should not have allowed for us to come raise issues, and when there's an arbitration word, we all took backseat. That's what I did. Up to a situation where there were views that how best we can assist MDPS. There were suggestions, and I was forwarded to those suggestions, because here is an entity that we were seeing it failing due to systems that were put in place. And for example, the suggestion first was that, is it possible that you bring a company that is owned by young people, get MDPS, train them, work with them, and then when they come to Linda, they get a BE scorecard, they work like anybody else. Or what else that Vodacom can do to engage this company better? But the day from the legal point of view of Vodacom says, guys, here is an arbitration knocking at the door of Vodacom. And I remember I'm the one that came to portfolio committee to say, therefore, we can't talk about this issue anymore. So I had to remove Themba Kinana and put Vodacom. And I think Linda's journey that she says, we didn't look at this issue the manner that we were supposed to look at it. It's fair statement. But as I said, that it's one of the areas that I don't think we really followed the proximity or the way that we're handling this matter. Maybe the idea was not there of the facilitation, but when the idea of the facilitation was brought to the CEO, particularly by Linda, and everybody else, ex-co people supporting it, I think, Chair, even before this issue would have gone to the arbitration, if the idea or this mechanism of conflict resolution, I can put in that way, was there, would have handled it better and so on. Yes, Chair.
Do you remember the day on which I said we should have a common understanding of people who are called stakeholders, managers, and who interact with the parliament and government? Both of you were in that meeting, and I hope that we have a common understanding that you are not put in those positions to manage us. You are put in those positions to actually facilitate a situation where we can have a common perspective in terms of issues, particularly where the country is going to. Do you remember that, both of you? You can continue.
Thank you, Chair. I remember very well, Chair. And Chair, it has really made our work much better. And I'm not saying, Chair, we have finished the journey, but it has made it. It has made a difference. And thank you for that education. The second area, Chair, it's once the arbitration process that curtain was drawn, I'm amongst those, and I think Linda says so, we pulled back. Maybe we've pulled back on something that we should have got more involved, assist, but we pulled back. And I am joining Linda to say that we failed the committee, we've failed you, we failed our mandate. But also, Chair, there's an issue here, Chair, that I want us to take further as Vodacom. The names that are being raised, particularly because Linda will tell you, Chair, I raised this matter of our chief for technology, Mr. Andres Delport, and I say that, can your name not be used anymore? I raised that, you were there, because I was picking up all these issues. So, Chair, I think we are taking another responsibility from you to go back to the CEO on this matter. The name of Maharaj, Chair, I think, I'm looking at my notebooks, you continued to raise that name, Praveen, because Praveen becomes a common denominator. When the Ericsson was there, Praveen's name came in, Sunil came in, and also even within the context of Mobek.
Andrew Barnard.
And yes, Chair. At the beginning, there was a gentleman called Stephen Banwal, and I think, Chair, you were very kind of firm with us in Peter Maritzburg until there was a confession from him. I won't give the portfolio committee what was that confession, but there was a confession. Yes, of course, he has moved out of KZN now. He's responsible for another business. But I want to speak on his behalf, Chair, to say at least he was beginning to be in the transformation journey, I must be honest. Because every day he speaks on this issue. He said this is what the chairperson and portfolio committee is expecting from us. He's an ambassador now on this matter. So I'm saying, Chair, that at least there's work that you did. But these other gentlemen, Chair, please, I'm asking the committee to allow us, as we have taken that seven-day journey, Linda, to sit again with the CEO and these affected executives, Andrew Delport, Kevin, and so on, beside the litigation, beside the arbitration, Chair, I think there is something that we need ourselves, just to say, Vodacom, this is what is in the preview of the committee. Because now things have been laid bare, honestly speaking. Yeah? And I think Linda, we must commit to, as we have taken the 7 days, because there's a lot that the honorable members have raised in regarding to this issue. The last issue, Chair, that I wanted to raise is, again, is that the proximity of KZN on the matter, when the CEO was confirming this facilitation on the Mobex and NILA, he said even KZN managers must not be involved because they keep on coming. Part of the issues. So that's why we have removed the issue of Mobex and NILA out of KZN being managed at head office. And the operational issues involving KZN when the need is arising. In my view, that if this idea was there, Chair, at the beginning, I think the MTPS would have been managed
better. But of course, we will have to sit down with the organization and go through some of these issues and so on. On the payment issue, Chair, when this issue came to my attention from Piet, from MDPS in December, he was getting frustration that the payment was not coming as the time that was agreed. We facilitated from the corporate affairs, and he confirmed to me that the payment was made, because it was an offer that as one measure that we made in the portfolio committee, Honorable Humbert. We made an offer in the portfolio committee to say some of the burdens that we can take out of MTPS was to buy those engines, maybe so that they don't face those financial burdens. So we agreed that those will be bought, and the term that was used. As to what was the final determination, I'm not privy to that, Honorable Beko. It was a market-related price. And we were comfortable because, and Honorable Kruger is right, and the chairperson, that there was a stage, it was reported, when I was very close to the matter, that even the houses were threatened to be repossessed and all that and so on. So there was a view that, how do you lessen that? So it was just an intervention. That was our interpretation, Honorable Berger. Sorry, Chair.
Honorable Berger.
Can I just make a follow-up, Honorable Chair? You know why I was asking this question? It's because when Linda was responding to the matter, she said after the application, Vodacom decided to pull out. But now I'm asking the issue of payment, because when we put the last meeting when we seated here, there was an issue of application, and there was an arrangement that MTPS should be paid. But now I'm asking the position of the Vodacom in that matter. What was the position of Vodacom? Because you paid the people, after that you said, no, I'm not involved. That was my question.
I also want to zoom in there to say that the tools of trade are not only the generators. These companies are put into a burden of getting the vehicles, which are financed by the banks, which when the contract is taken away, they still have to pay for those vans. And if they fail to do so, they get repossessed. And if the value of the van is lesser than what is owed, the banks go for them. You see, you must understand why when we are discussing these issues, we also invited the Department of Small Business. Because we want the Department of Small Business to understand the need for putting in place a different financing model for small businesses and not subject them to commercial banks. You give me a contract, I buy 12 vans or 6 vans to do your work. You give me a 10 days notice to terminate the contract. When I'm sitting with a debt from a bank that I have to service, how is that transformation in your understanding, Linda? When Mobil contracted by you can give, because if you had policies in place that thou shall not, Mobil would not have done that. Which company would be given a 10 days notice to terminate a contract when you have bought vans and when you have deployed generators? So, what you see as a relief to them, from where I sit, I don't see it as a relief to the MDPS. They were still left with debt.
Actually, I'm just conscious of the time. We still have another presentation to see, and we've still got to consider our report. But I just want to make one quick point, and that's that the Watergate scandal taught us one thing, important thing, and that is that the cover-up is often worse than the crime. That's what's been happening here. There's a cover-up. And I'm asking you, if you have it in you, to originate, to go back to the original crime, say that once you trigger the legal route, a whole set of events inevitably takes its course, because that's the way the law works. But do you have it in you to go the NILA route with this issue of NDPS?
Sorry, I will just summarize for a minute, Chair. It's in that context, Honorable Chance, that I'm saying we wanted to take the seven-day route. So Linda and I consolidated this report, and with all the issues that sort of have been amplified, we sit with the CEO, we look at the CEO's eyes, and say the balance of forces are not the same. And I think there's some introspection that we need to make ourselves on this issue, Chair, and in order to see, well, for example, Chair, if the Chair is saying there are people that have been captured in Vodacom, and she's mentioning names, the company Boniswa was supposed to come to follow committee number of times, present, and there's information available that the Chair says she's now a friend, I'm saying that, to one of us, and all of a sudden those issues, we'll have to take these issues, Linda, and in my view, go back to the CEO. If this mandate is being extended to say, yes, of course, was there this litigation or this arbitration, but arbitration or litigation, there are fundamental issues of reputation that I hear. There are fundamental issues that on our moral and ethics, on our standing, on how our people are behaving, you know, and I think those are the issues that, in my view, we need to separate them, you know, from all these issues and so on. Just in summary, Linda will give you now, just in summary, Chair, to say, I think if we can be given, just we step back and look on these issues within 7 days and give the chairperson a report. Because to me, I'm taking them to the heart, Chair. Thank you.
I think if I'm hearing what Honorable Chance is asking, is whether you and I will mitigate a process and facilitate the MDPS process. Is that what I'm hearing? Right. I think the simple answer is yes, a resounding yes. However, again, I need to be cognizant of the legal process or the arbitration process and to see whether it is allowed that sideline can actually happen. I'm not too sure, bearing in mind that I have a fiduciary duty as does Temba to the Vodacom Group, who we represent from an employment point of view, whilst at the same time we also have to balance happening.
My letter was not to you. It was to the group CEO. The highest decision-making person in Vodacom. And that is why members are asking this. Because what we see here is a cover-up when it comes to in dealing with the issue of MDPS and Ericsson, because there are Vodacom managers involved. So Vodacom and Ericsson are trying by all means to cover up and sacrifice the if this process has taken us 2.5 years, how long is the litigation and arbitration going to take? They will be wiped out by that time.
Well, then,
but that is the understanding. And also, the timing, there will be a different committee. You will not be, have, I may not be sitting here on this seat with this in-depth understanding of the matter.
Well, then I'm going to respond again by saying a resounding yes. Because I will take it that my CEO, Group CEO, will handle the fiduciary part of this.
You instruct the lawyers and the arbitrators, not the other way around.
No, it wasn't Vodacom.
What I'm saying, you, as in the client, whether it be Ericsson or you, whoever is instructing the arbitrator.
I think Ericsson
yes,
did, right, yeah.
Right. What I'm saying is that you're going to have a very close conversation with Ericsson, or at least your CEO is, around this matter.
Ericsson?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much, honorable members of the committee. And I must say it has been a journey, and also once more echo what has come up, that I think this process has brought quite a lot to light. I think we have also taken a lot out of all the interactions we had in terms of the things that over time we kept on looking into our policies where they needed improvement and where we needed to look at to make sure that obviously the company remains relevant and continues to be relevant because South Africa is obviously one of our major markets that we look at. And I would like to assure this committee that Ericsson does not take the feedback lightly. We continue to treat the feedback very, very seriously. Maybe on one or two matters that I would like to just clarify, Chair, as well, is that there are a few points that has came up which are of serious concern that I think we would like that to be taken up. I mean, there's a matter of corruption that has come up which obviously any other company, Ericsson being a listed company, corruption matters needs to be reported, investigated, so that then proper actions can be able to be taken. So that would not be, it's something that I would like obviously that to be brought to attention. There are death email or death threat emails that have been raised. I'm not sure whether they are raised in the context of anything that affects the company. I think that's very important to obviously be able to make sure that those matters are being taken care of, obviously, to be able to look into that. The other issue I think that was just debated now being the issue of around arbitration and facilitation. I think that's something that obviously, if there is that discussion that it's open, that needs to be taken place. I think that's something that we need to look at between the three parties, because obviously the nature of how the things have been set up now obviously allowed the matter to be proceeded between the two parties. But obviously, if they, with the call of this committee, I think we cannot maybe ignore that. I think it's up to us. Obviously, my colleague here will step in on that to make sure that what obviously can be done to listen to the committee as well, and with what Vodacom is indicating as well, to go back and say, can we re-look into this and then see what outcomes could be resulted. I think just to emphasize as well is that I think we should not look at the matter of arbitration as if it's something that we just picked up. I think it has been obviously one of the issues where parties differ on the views on particular matter. I think this was one of the way to find a resolution to the matter. But I think given what has been highlighted, that maybe the process is taking longer or the other issues that need to be considered, if there is another way that leads us to come to the conclusion, I think it's in the interest of the company to conclude the matter. and I think the company will definitely be able to look into that. So maybe I'll ask my colleague as well just to add up on some of the points. Yeah.
I'm not adding anything. I don't want him to add before I say what I want to say. You see, Erickson brought an advocate. Erickson brought an advocate, not just an advocate, an arrogant advocate, to address MDPS and NILA, because the strategy was to frustrate the process, take the committee out of this cover-up. That was the strategy. So, it was not an issue of the two parties willing to go on arbitration. It was a strategy employed by Ericsson to force MDPS to go to arbitration in the same way that Ericsson said NILA has got no claim for the 7 months loss of income. And your legal representative came with all sorts of explanations, which today that explanation is actually disputed by Vodacom, who says if a contractor has been contracted by Vodacom and a new management company is put in to manage on behalf of Vodacom, in this case, it is Ericsson. What was supposed to happen was to have the original contract between Vodacom and this company continuing. The only thing that had to change on the place of Vodacom, you would put Ericsson. That's all. The same thing applies to Mobil. If Mobil says we will try this time 3 months to see that we are working from where we sit, again, it's another tactic to shift the goalpost, because you find me here doing this job managed by the owner of the contractor, and when you come in, you want to put new things when you don't know anything about this job. All you know about is to how to manage, because you were assessed on that. We won't go to issues of speaking to employees of these companies being poached by companies that are actually contracted by Vodacom to manage, because these smaller companies have trained their employees, and then the companies that who are given work to do don't have those expertise, and then they poach. We won't go into those things, but we know all those things. Remember, members of parliament don't sit here in parliament. We have constituency offices, and my constituency office is in Pochestin. I come from KwaZulu-Natal. So even people on the street will stop me and talk to me about things. So I don't know what is it that you wanted to add. Because the issue here is the issue of you are saying there is admission that we could have looked at this matter differently. And that is what we need to be talking about here now. Mr. Makofan, I want you to assume your position and not be led by technocrats.
in the organization, because your responsibility is to manage relationships, not to manage us.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think my point was, the last point was to say, as obviously the arbitration has been the matter with EPTAT into, I think as parties then we need to go back and say it is not, we are not arriving at the conclusion of the matter, maybe fast enough of what we wanted to close. And then I think given what is, Vodacom has indicated, then let's go back and see during this facilitation and that what are some of the things that could be reset. I think the point I was emphasizing is that two parties have entered into, so therefore it will be the two parties that will need to then go back to the table and say how do we move forward with that, so that we can achieve as much as what the committee wants us to achieve. We do really take the committee message very clearly. Yeah.
And we are saying that that agreement between the two parties was the survival of the protest. That's what we are saying here. I think this matter is closed. Let's move to the next matter. Honourable Cook.
Are we going to stick to the 7 days from Ericsson as well? Are they going to come back to us in the next 7 days?
They'll have to tell us. Vodacom is saying they are going to use that experience. We don't know what Ericsson is saying. All that we hear is that Ericsson is coming to its sober senses now.
No, thanks, Chair. Mine is very few, Chair. I will appeal to Vodacom to assist in this round three process now, because we are looking at application is not going to assist us. Can you assist this process? Thank you.
Because it's a contract. It's something that happened when the contract was done. Unless Vodacom doesn't care about its reputation, can we?
Yeah, I just want to say, Chair, and I'm happy with the last point, Chair, you raised, because currently there is no contract between, and I think we'll have to, I think, let's engage with them, Chair, and see what's possible within the limited time frames and also within the legal framework. But I think we'll report to you, Chair. But I think let's meet and see what's possible, because currently, remember, we don't have a contract with them anymore. They walked out of the contract, that's why now we've got more back. But I'm saying that I think in a retrospective manner, I think let's sit down, let's see what can be done, whether our model can work. But we'll report to you, Chair. But in principle, I think we're in all agreement that I think something went wrong, and I think it should have been managed better. And then currently there are new views from portfolio committee, and I think let's see what can be done. That's my view, Chair.
Remember that the information we have is that managers within Vodacom doctored the report. So that is the source of the problem. If managers in Vodacom had not doctored the report to protect those in Ericsson, this would not have happened. Can we move to the next one?
Yeah, well, Salo, is it okay for us to speak from here? Or?
Okay, Siyabonga. Salo, my name is Siyabonga Mahlangu. I'm a group executive responsible for regulatory affairs and government relations at the Telkom Group. I'm here with Mr. Bugani Mde, who is in the government relations arm, and also I'm here with Ms. Kamenita at the back. She's here, she's our parliamentary liaison. perhaps I would ask our colleagues from Huawei to introduce themselves before I start.
Good afternoon, Chair. Good afternoon, all members and all guests. I'm Christina Naidu, and I'm the COO of Huawei Technologies Africa.
Good afternoon, Chair and honourable members. My name is Herman Kannenberg, and I head up the legal department at Huawei in South Africa.
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. If we reflect on where we were last time, Chairperson, you will, insofar as DTY is concerned, is that certain discussions were going to take place between Huawei and DTY, and we then played a role of just maintaining a safe following distance, but watching how the discussions are proceeding. So we have our own views on what we have observed, we would rather the parties explain it to you, and then we can answer where the committee calls upon us to answer. And in that way, Chair, I would leave it to the COO.
Afternoon again, everybody. At the last meeting, there was two issues that was raised by DigiWire in this meeting. One of them being a claim for an outstanding payment of 818,000, and the other one was a site clearance certificates in order for them to keep their membership at the CIBD. When we left this committee, we said we would look into it and we would come up with a solution as to how we're going to resolve it. We left with that understanding from the committee. Immediately when I went back, I asked for an executive meeting with all our executive members, and I raised all the concerns that was raised at Parliament regarding the issues pertaining to DigiWire. At that committee meeting, we made a decision that we're going to put a task team in place to specifically look at the outstanding payment relating to DigiWire. In that committee, we included the internal audit committee member to ensure that we have an independent view, and we've excluded all the members that previously contributed to the feedback indicating that there was no money outstanding. This was specifically done in order for us to get an independent view to ensure whether the claims are valid or not valid. In addition to that, our internal team had the opinion that we've complied with everything as far as the CIBD was concerned. But going further, we also commissioned the services of a third party to come in and give us an objective opinion as to whether we're correct or whether we're incorrect. Both outcomes was basically to give us as a company as well as an understanding as to whether we are doing the right thing, the wrong thing, what improvements need to be put in place, or are we just basically disregarding what is being said to us. So based on both findings, I'm going to hand over now to Mr. Kannenberg, who was more involved with regard to the investigations and the outcome, to give you feedback on both the outstanding payment as well as the CIBD certifications.
Thank you, Mrs. Smiley. Just to confirm to the committee, again, the investigations that we did internally revolved around two specific issues. One was, like Mrs. Smiley mentioned, the outstanding payment, and the initial claim in that regard, the allegation was that we owed an amount of 818,000 to DigiWire. The second issue was that Huawei did not provide adequate certification for completion of sites, thereby not placing DigiWire in a position to reapply for their grading at the CIDB, and the allegation that was also made by DigiWire is that as a result, they were then deregistered by the CIDB. With regards to the payment, our internal audit, and if I recall, this was also at a very high level mentioned at the previous meeting, or alluded to at the previous meeting, found that a duplicate payment had been made to DigiWire in the amount of 377,000 rand. This duplicate payment related to a site in terms of which the site name had been changed, whereafter DigiWire submitted another acceptance as well as invoice for the exact same work that had been done. Unfortunately, our internal controls did not pick this up, and an amount of in the vicinity of 378,000 rand was made to them. We then made an internal decision with regards to this. The 377 was deducted from the 818 that was alleged was to be due and owing, thereby leaving an amount of 440,000 rand. Unfortunately, we were unable to verify the veracity of any of the claims submitted to us by the DigiWire. There was no purchase orders, no proof of completion, etc., etc. Despite that fact, we took an internal view that while I would pay the full outstanding amount after the reduction of that duplicate payment to DigiWire, and then we would do that as a gesture of goodwill and as an ex gratia payment and in full and final settlement of the matters or the issues between us. This payment was made, if I recall, in October, November, I speak under correction, but towards the end of last year. That's our position with regards to the outstanding payment. With regards to the Construction Industry Development Board certification and deregistration allegation, like Mrs. Nairis indicated, we made a decision to appoint an external law firm. In this regard, we appointed Norton Rose Fulbright to investigate and provide feedback to us with regards to our obligations and also indicate whether there is a compliance obligation on Huawei with regards to CIDB. Their investigation and their view that they submitted to us is that Huawei's work completion certificates presented to DigiWire complies fully with the regulations of the CIDB, in that it indicates work that for the work that has been done, it indicates the work has been done. It even goes so far as to refer to a quantity surveyor and that there has been substantial completion of those particular sites. Over and above that, we also issued a further work completion certificate where we, after liaising with Telkom, obtained their signature on as well as ours, which is not a requirement in terms of either the regulations or the contract, and it also issued that to DigiWire. What is also of note and of interest is that during the investigations by our external law firm, it did come to light that there had been no deregistration by the CIDB of DigiWire. Insofar as the communication is that they shared with us and that we also shared with DigiWire and with this committee during the month of January, the indication is that DigiWire is as at that date, which I think was the 19th of January, a fully paid up and registered member of the CIDB, and that registration did not lapse and was not deregistered. And that's our submission on these two points.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'm not sure if I heard correctly here. The amount that was supposed to pay to DigiWire was 800 and something. How much?
It was, I can give you the exact amount if you just give me 1 second. 818,416.88. That's the original.
Okay,
payment.
No. It's fine. But before you pay that, you conducted an investigation about the amount that you are supposed to pay them. The two investigations came out that there was no money that was owed to DigiWire. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, fine. Now you decided further. You did another investigation. You find out there was a duplicate of 300 and something rand. Is that correct?
Yes, the amount was...
That's what you said.
377,629.50.
Okay. If there was no money that has been owed, like that 800,000 that was not owed for this company, why you decided to pay this 300 rand? I mean, this 300,000? Because you dispute, you said no, the two investigations said there was no money owed to them. But still, you paid the 300,000 rand. What was that 300,000 rand for? Thank you.
Okay. In the same wavelength,
you conducted your internal investigation, as I heard you correctly. Thereafter, you appoint lawyers to conduct an investigation on you to check if you were correct. They bring a report to you, perhaps that says you are correct. So the reason to appoint lawyers to come with the same answer to you, I don't know, maybe if does it suffice, because I view you as not having been fair on the process, because no external body will find you the same way, because those lawyers have been paid by you as well. So what was the reason of such act? You know, did you want just a report that says it's legal, you're okay? I think you are a legal division because you said you are a lawyer. What is your report to the department? If you want another legal opinion from another lawyer about your institution, investigating yourself, I don't know.
Can I respond? Okay. On the first issue regarding the payment, the company took a view that it was a payment that's going to be made ex gratia. So it's not paid with admission of liability for fault or wrongdoing, but that it's simply an offer, a payment made as part of an offer of settlement, and that finalizes everything. You will obviously respect the fact that there are immense costs involved in traveling down to parliamentary committee meetings, taking time of all the executives internally to assess, to investigate, to audit, etc., etc. So a settlement is like anything. If you and I don't agree about something and we reach a settlement and I'm willing to pay X amount for the matter to be finalized, that should be the end of it. That deals with the 440 payment and our reasoning behind it. With regards to the report, I think we were between a rock and a hard place in that regard. Had we not gone to an external attorney's firm to get an opinion, we may have opened ourselves to criticism to say that we come to the parliamentary committee and we elbow smaller companies and force them to go to lawyers and expend the money to get that opinion. You requested specifically my view on the matter. As the head of the legal department, my view has always been that we have complied with our regulations on the CIDB. However, my view gets potentially questioned, and therefore we go externally to an objective third party to verify that view and to confirm it. And yes, we do pay them for it. They don't work for free. But you would perhaps need to raise your queries on with regards to their impartiality with them directly. Norton Rose Fulbright is one of the biggest law firms in the world, and I think their approach to these types of matters and to providing legal opinion is in most matters cannot be placed in question in the way that you have done with respect in that regard.
Sorry, if I may just add, the payment that was made, okay, it was basically on my insistence. The company felt there was absolutely no wrongdoing on their side, but I said, you know, we represent Huawei in Parliament. We walked out of Parliament with a commitment that we will conclude this matter. I can accept the fact that the 377 overpayment was going to be taken back from governance processes. I had no ground to stand. But I pleaded to the committee, and I pleaded for them to get extra approval in order for us to do this because of the public image that we create, that we are fighting for 818,000 rand, and like everybody else, I'm also responsible for transformation, and I don't want a payment of 880 to be lost on the fact of all the good that we do, and everybody just looks at the fact of a non-payment. So that is why we've paid the 440. The other issue as well with regard to the legal opinion, it's not about us trying to prove or being arrogant with regard to our approach. It's just to give you a comfort that even though we feel this way, we've gone out further to confirm that this is what the facts is as far as this is concerned, to just give you a further comfort with regard to what we've done in trying to resolve this matter.
Honourable Chance, followed by Honourable Tembo and Honourable Club. Can Honourable Papa come and relieve me here?
Chair, it was just a follow-up before Honourable Chance. Chair, it was just a follow-up before Honourable Chance. I don't think Parliament need comfort here. Ours, we need what is right. The issue is, I don't know, maybe why would you not consider a second legal opinion? Because when you appoint somebody to come to you with the same finding about you, it's something else. Maybe you'll note it down. Thank you, Chair.
I just want to, before we get DigiWire's side of the story, I want to ask you, in relation to the duplicate invoice, the so-called duplicate invoice, do you believe that that invoice was issued by DigiWire by mistake, or do you think it was issued with fraudulent intent?
Thank you,
Chair of the session. No, it's only clarity from Mrs. Naidu. I'm a bit confused here. You know, also like maybe taking from the question, Honourable Chan. It's like us as the portfolio committee, we have made them to pay when they were not supposed to pay. It's like they were pressurized by us in a way. It's like they dispute that they were owing to DGY. But at the very same time, when they were paying, it's because, yes, they're disputing this 800, but they are paying this 400,000. Because it's like we're pressurizing them as the portfolio committee. So if she can clarify that, because you can't be doing something when you believe that you are correct, you are not owing. You are not owing. And even the length that you have went to in terms of the legal advisors and what have you, you can't be paying. So I really don't understand, because you are putting our reputation on the line that you will be doing things, you know, because you are getting this pressure from us. If that can be clarified.
I'll give a feedback with regard to the pressurized. You've not pressurized us. This is a company decision that we have made, and we've made that decision in light of our reputation. So it is no pressure from any committee that has given us. We stand by the fact that we do not owe any money outstanding. The decision was taken by the committee internally within our organization that we will pay the 440 out of good faith. So that was not on account of any pressure from yourselves.
There's a follow-up from Honourable Bewa. Thanks, madam. You said this settlement was an agreement. Was an agreement of both parties, the DGY and yourself?
Chair, if I may, I'll respond to that after responding to Mr. Chance's question, which I think is still unanswered. With the information we have at hand, there was no intent with regards to fraud that we could decipher or establish. With regards to the last question, sorry, if you can just yes. We made the payment under the guise of it being in full and final settlement. So we said, here is the payment of the money, your acceptance of this indicates that it's in full and final settlement. Subsequent to that, and I think as late as, was it last week or the week prior to that, DigiWire has indicated through their actions that they do not necessarily accept that settlement, which now leaves us at a crossroads with regards to where we stand and what the next steps are to be taken in that regard.
And a follow-up?
follow up, Mr. Chan?
Yeah, I just want to follow up. What, Mr. Kannenberg, what was the period separating the payment of the 376,000 for the correct invoice and the second payment that was made? How far apart were those invoices issued, number one, and how far apart were the payments? I mean, and at what point did you get, or have you got DigiWire's agreement that that was a duplicate invoice?
Unfortunately, I cannot tell you exactly the exact dates. I simply just don't know, as I said here. I mean, it's perhaps something that we can check and we can get back to you on. I have, however, seen the acceptance documents, and it is as clear as daylight that it's for the exact same issue, for the exact same work that has been done. I don't know if I'm allowed to go off the record at a parliamentary committee hearing, but my view on this is that perhaps it was a mistake that slipped through. As I say, we didn't investigate and interrogate it in full detail. There was, however, a site name change at that stage as well, which could have led to the confusion on DigiWire's side, perhaps, as well as on ours, for signing off on the acceptances and then paying that duplicate amount.
Honourable Chance, can you do me this favour? Can you give a simple summary of this understanding of the committee of this committee? It's going to assist us. Maybe Honourable Wega will assist you.
Sorry, I'm not quite sure I follow you. What do you want me to do?
I was saying, what is the outcome? Are you
able to give a summary, a brief of the understanding of us as a committee of this situation as it is happening now? Or maybe you want to do that after...
I think it's important that we hear DigiWire before we make any comments.
DigiWire, where are they? She is coming. We hope that you are going to continue, you improve in assisting the committee out.
Good day to the chairperson, honourable members, and all present here today. Once again, I want to thank you for the opportunity to be able to be part of the follow-up meeting. And I want to also applaud you and applaud the chairperson and the committee members in your understanding of what SMME companies are faced with at ground level. At the last meeting, a lot of issues were discussed in terms of the minutes that are available, and I think I just want to do this in a very quick format. Some of the honourable members have requested information from WAWI, and I'd like to find out if that information was submitted to this portfolio committee, like documentation on 31% black women-owned shareholding that was proof of visas, work permits to awarded to the Chinese people who have been trained in South Africa, proof of the 500 million rand CSI programs that they invested in. WAWI has invested in a 1.4 billion rand campus, and in terms of proof of skills of transfer, training of South Africans, as it was indicated by one of WAWI's personnel, that 60% of South Africans were being trained and 40% of Chinese have been trained. I just basically want to know if all of that documentation has been provided to this committee. I think I want to start off saying to this committee and to everybody present here is I was told to pick a finger because they are politically connected. I was also told by Herman Kannenberg in the telecon that I've had with him after the last meeting, and I was not sure what he was alluding to, but it later dawned on me, that as we speak, they are on their way to headquarters. And I think I'm going to elaborate on that a little bit more, because not all of the portfolio committee members were copied on my emails. It was, I think, Honorable Mabasa, Mr. Chance, and our chairperson, together with Telkom and Wowie. So, and I responded to that comment, because the next day it was splashed out in the news, in the media, on television, our president was visiting China and Wowie's offices. So I responded in an email asking, what has our outstanding payments got to do with the president's visit to China and Wowie? And I still haven't got an answer on that. But instead, what was responded, and we're doing the, we're addressing this from a, from the very latter, is as Herman Kallenberg says, that they had their international lawyers to do an investigation, but the international lawyers, who's Norton Rose Fulbright, has been probing into my portfolio, which is strictly confidential with the CIDB. And why was information from the CIDB being given to, in terms of confidential information, on my company to Wowie Technologies? Because I'm the registered contractor. DigiWire is a registered contractor and not Wowie. That's the one issue. Yes, our CIDB grading has expired due to non-allocation of work completion certificates. And I have proofed on that. So I was also accused of lying to this committee. I've also forwarded this document on email, and I have a copy here, to show you that it's been expired. So just to give you a little bit of information on the CIDB, all construction companies and its mandate, according to the CIDB, have to be registered with the CIDB. And I want to read this out. It's a very small note. It's an engineering news by Creamer Media. And this information was given by the board of the CIDB. It says, government departments, municipalities, and public entities may not award tenders to contractors that are not registered with the CIDB, according to the CIDB Act 38 of 2000 and the Construction Industry Regulations of 2004. The board also says, unscrupulous contractors are increasingly resorting to bribery, fraud, and corruption to bypass CIDB requirements for registration, especially in higher grades, in a bid on construction. And what I want to read here to you is, I read this to you in the last meeting, we've engaged two sets of lawyers. And this is a response on our second set of lawyers. Our lawyers have written to Wowie, and this is all about, we're not talking about the payment, we're just talking about the CIDB. Is the legislation governing the construction industry in the Construction Industry Development Board Act 38 of 2000 and the regulations thereto? The regulations in particular deal with the requirements of work completion certificates, also referred to as practical work completion certificates. Wowie's legal team, that was Charles Udendahl, that obviously reports to Herman Kallenberg, responds to my lawyer saying, thank you for your email below. Kindly take note that your client attends to actual contractual, whereas Wowie does not. And it also says, Wowie is therefore not obliged to be registered with the CIDB. And the big reason is, so the reason is, why are they? So why are they in construction, and why are they the main contractors? So here we get a massive contract, or a multi-million rand contract, gets awarded from Telkom as an SOC, who's not exempted from the triple PFA, and has awarded this contract in the time frame prior to the Telkom exemption to a non-construction company that does not comply with construction and is not registered with the CIDB. So, Chair, what I'd also like to say to you, and I think I've just written a few notes here, is in the latter emails that I've been addressing to Wowie and to the Portfolio Committee, I've been requesting, and my emails have been ignored, Huawei's validated BE certificate 2015 and 2016? Because I'm in possession of a document that shows non-compliance on their side. BE certification expired in 2014 and was zeroed in 2016. And that's the reason why I've been asking for information around this. Sorry, if you just bear with me. With regard to the outstanding payment, and this basically filters down to, in the last discussion, in the previous meeting, is the constant change of staff, where there's no proper handover. And this is why they don't really have sign-offs, they don't have documentation, and here Christina Snyder says, as a matter of kind or good gesture, that they have, she's making it sound as though they did us a favor in terms of paying the 400 and some odd thousand. By the way, the amount outstanding was 2.2 million, which has escalated in interest. And they took it upon themselves, and they've just, yes, we've never denied that there was an overpayment. In fact, I was at their offices to address this overpayment. And when I made the arrangement and I went to their offices in Centurion to discuss this, both their staff members had gone on lunch. I sat in my car for 1 hour. And they have not taken my calls, they've blocked my number, because you could see the maladministration that took place within their company. So what has happened is, in the interim period, while we submitted a PO, one of their staff members by the name of Ivan, somebody has left. And also, apart from that, the picking and choosing in terms of line items, so if we, and I think I just want to try and make you understand that if it took us 10 line items to build a site, and this was the biggest contentious issue that we received from 2015, is what we will say to us, we'll only pay you for the 5. We don't pay for X, Y, and Z, the other 5. As a result of not paying for the other 5 line items, that cost was absorbed by DigiWire. That cost was absorbed by DigiWire. So there was a lot of items that were left out on the BOQs and the POs. So when they generated the next PO, they would automatically forget about the other 5 items that was left out. And that's where the overpayment is coming in. So, yes, it was a duplicate payment of 376,000, but not all of that was duplicated, because the person that generated the PO should have probably generated half of that amount, but instead had made a mistake and has done it. So I went in to address it. I was not able to address it. Christina and Herman were never there at that point in time. I've got emails as to whom. There was a lady by the name of Tina that signed off on this. And the acceptance that he talks about, that's, if you look at all the line items that were signed against that PAC, it's a member on their team. That can be made available to this committee. There are outstanding payments. The outstanding payments it's inflated now to 1.7 million. And to answer the question of the portfolio committee members, please forgive me, I don't know everybody's names. The payments that's the 800 and some odd rands that Huawei has decided to pay, extracting the 300 and some odd, yes, immediately I've sent in an updated statement, and immediately I've alerted him to that. But there's not just that amount that's outstanding. Look at the time frame. It's going to be 39 months that money is outstanding. They've decided to pay the 400,000 after 25 months. So when the last payment was made in August, September, they now made a payment in 2018, October. So as a small, medium company, how do we sustain our organization in terms of outstanding money? How do we sustain the business? I've closed down my organization. I've closed down my operations. I've lost all my team members. I've allocated 65 staff to Huawei sites. Chair, I don't think we can deal with this in isolation with regards to payments, with regards to the outstanding payments and the CIDB certificates. But I want to elaborate a little bit more on the CIDB certificates is that I'm not sure if WARI is aware of this. Is by them not submitting our work completion certificates has led, and I want to place emphasis on this, is that it has led to our CIDB grading being expired. Because I did my submissions, and when I got in, because it's not just certificates that we submit to the CIDB, it's financials, it's three-year financials, it's personal documentations, tax clearances, BE certificates, a whole load of information together with that. And but where the shortcomings are, and this has to be recognized, because our article is going to be published in the Sunday Times this week, and that's, we took it to that level, is the practical work completion certificates, when you're dealing with state, gives you an indication of who the organization is, the state-owned company or the SOC, what the project is all about, what the tender number is and the value of the project, the scope of works, and obviously signed off by the relevant people as to in agreement that we have now completed the work and have been paid for. So the debacle around the work completion certificates and the issues are that document needs a tender number. And that's where the shortcomings are. Now, the CIDB is saying anybody, and this is what they have been experiencing, companies have been coming to them, issuing all the documentation, issuing fraudulent work completion certificates. Now we need to, and in order to increase the grading, because the grading dictates the type of value, the value of projects that get awarded to you. So if you, in our case, we're a level four, we should be getting projects to the value up to 4 million. So if you go up to level five or six, and that figure escalates. So, and on that basis, our grading got expired. And yes, I've submitted proof to the portfolio committee, to WARI, showing the expiry date on that. But I just want to explain this to you why that, and it's just a one line. The CIDB has taken a decision, and I think I could do a lot of talking, but I mean, I want to basically keep it, minimize it. The CIDB has taken a decision, and it's called the moratorium on a three-year cycle. And that was based on the economy. But if you go into what's happening now that's in the public domain around our state capture and our economy, the big question is, were we in a recession? These are all the issues that I'm handling or discussions that I'm having with the necessary departments. But I want to stick to the subject here. So that's the, on that basis that, so the CIDB, together with outsource committees, have taken a decision that we were not going to allow our contractors to have their gradings downgraded because of the recession, because of the economy. So they took a decision that within a 5 or a 3 year period, if you fell within 2016 going forward, we will honor your grading over the next period of 3 years, up until 3 years. And on the basis of that is how our grading got active again. So it's not about they have it. So what's still outstanding from WARI is all our work completion certificates that requires a tender number. And on the principle of that, they will not, and that's how it expired. To date, we have not received that. So the biggest bone of contention here is we can't deal with this in isolation. We have an SOC. And so I'm having interactions with National Treasury, the Telecoms Department, at Director General level meetings, communications. I have multiple emails, and I'm not just speculating. I've got a lot of information in writing. So Telcom has been exempted from the PFMA. Now, if we look at the Public Finance Management Act, they get exemptions over a period of time. right? But as a Schedule II listed company, there are obviously sub-regulations that they need to comply with. Now, in this scenario, Telkom was exempted off the triple PFA. And obviously, I listened to Minister Gordon's testimony because he was a former finance minister at that point in time, and I basically wanted to know if he was the person that signed this exemption over that period of time. We had a whole week of testimony that he put forward. But we're still getting to that. But essentially, Telkom has been exempted from the triple PFA effective from July 2016. So my point to this committee is, prior to that, they would have still had to comply with tender policies and processes. They were not exempted from. In other words, our projects have started in 2015, and it had finished round about the first week of May 2016. So that's the bone of, this is what I mean when I say that we can't deal with this in isolation. Because it's become a big issue. It's not just now a payment issue. They've closed my operations down. It's not, and we still got CIDB certificates that are outstanding. So there's such a lot to talk about here. I just want to keep it down. In terms of what Wally has just discussed now around the payment issues, they have decided to pay. If you look at it, the first payment from September 2015 when we started. The first payment was made to us in December, around the 22nd of December. Now, why Christina is saying that that amount, that it's full and final, is at some point in 2015, Telkom had decided then that they needed to micromanage Huawei's contractors. Now, that's a big conflict of interest. Here we get a client that's awarding a massive construction contract to a non-construction company, one. Two, then you get Telkom intervening and managing Telkom subcontractors. I was party to all those meetings. The meetings were held with all the directors of the companies. It was either held in Telkom's offices in Blackheath or it was held in Huawei's office in Centurion. So what had happened at that point was Telkom, together with Huawei's team, have taken a decision that they had a deadline to finish feeder sites and distribution sites within a time frame. So they've given instructions in that meeting, and I've asked Christina and I do recently to provide minutes of that meeting so that we can clarify the decision. But I had an email link from somebody that used to work with Telkom, that managed Telkom, that micromanaged Huawei's contractors whilst he was in Telkom, who's now employed with Telkom, with Huawei, sorry. He's now employed with Huawei. So when I've asked for minutes of the meeting, there's an email link between Christina and the internal team that had said they denied that. But I was party to all those meetings. So basically what I'm alluding to is, when we started in 2015, we did quite a lot of work on six sites. On the four sites that we started in 2015 up until, and I want to give you a month, so we started around October. At the end of November, Telkom has decided, together with Huawei, that we should stop working and focus on their feeder sites, which is the backbone sites, because they have a deadline to meet and they wanted these sites to be completed. So all the work that we have done in that 6 weeks were never compensated for. We just had to take our teams and move on. And this is why I also spoke about the training on our build site. So we had to take our teams, move on, and nobody took accountability in Huawei to have paid us that amount. So this is where and they can't deny this because I've got proof of emails saying we've built the Holiday Inn in Woodmead. We worked on that site for 10 days. We worked on other sites for 6 weeks we were not compensated for. It was all in an email format, but not formally on an invoice. which I have now done last year. After the meeting, I've basically put that in writing, constructed proper invoices and sent it off. And so they decided that they're going to pay the amount that they wanted to pay, deducting the overpayment, and that has resulted into what has been paid. I just believe, Chair, that my company and my rights have been infringed upon. As an SMME company, and I want to read this out to you. SMME companies in South Africa. Sorry, I am jumping the gun a bit because I've prepared such a lot to speak about. As small businesses contribute to local economies by bringing growth and innovation to our communities. Small businesses also help to stimulate economy growth by providing employment opportunities to people who may not be employed by larger corporations. As an SMME company, black women-owned entrepreneur, rendering services in advanced technology and construction, contributing to South African economy, to the South African economy, DigiWire has regressed, losing almost 3 years of business due to unresolved issues with Huawei. So like I said, we can't just now deal with this in isolation because there's a state-owned company. So we're looking at compliance, non-compliance. And as we speak, we still don't have CIDB certification. So I would like advice from the committee in terms of the prescription on PAJA, which is promotion of administrators, the promotion of the Administration or Administrative Justice Act, and are we dealing with the contractual issues, administrative issues, or are we going to turn the page over because this contract was awarded to a non-construction company? And I'd like to know if I can get any type of advice from the portfolio committee. I have had interactions with the chair. It was a member in parliament that falls under the Department of Public Enterprise. The Board.
Public Works.
My apologies. Department of Public Works. They've asked me to report this to the CBE, which is the Council for the Built Environment, get back to the Telecommunications Department at ministry level, also to the Minister of Public Enterprise in terms of small businesses and the strain that we've taken, with regards to the BEE Commission, because as I believe that, as if Huawei can prove differently that they were in compliance from a BEE scenario, we need to address that. And I was also asked to report to the Zondo Commission. So we haven't got to that level. We are not in a position to take this to litigation. We've closed our operations down. I've mentioned this in the last meeting. And so the list goes on. I can speak about so many things, Chair, but it's draining. But here's Coogan. I want to introduce him to you. Coogan Gavendy wants to say a few things. He's the CEO of the organization.
I'm chairing the meeting.
Chair, you could decide if...
I am chairing the meeting. I'm looking at time.
Okay.
I'm looking at time, and I want Telkom to say its piece so that members can then engage in this. I'm sorry I'm not suppressing you, but we would want Telkom also to say something.
I just want to thank you for your time.
Chair, I will respond on some of the issues raised which pertain to Telkom, but I'd rather the specifics of some of the facts, because in my notes there's a lot of matters that seem to relate to Huawei, but my issues are fairly focused and I should be able to address them after that.
Thank you. If I may give feedback with regard to the black women ownership.
Chair, one other thing we don't compromise our work on is to be serious
in how we treat matters of parliament. South Africa is watching at ASEAN. A response of a gesture from either Telkom or the Huawei as a member is presenting or a person is presenting need to be called to order. We are a parliament of South Africa. You can't equate us to a company. We put order and law here. There must be order. Two, as
can I support what you are saying? If we were to give you a mirror, Mr. Masang, you'd really understand what Honorable Baba says. Your facial expression, you are not noticing it because you are not looking at yourself from the mirror, including your colleague. But communication happens in different ways. There's what is called verbal communication and non-verbal communication. As DJY was presenting, even now when I'm speaking, you are communicating facially with me, but you are not aware. And that communication that you are making is called non-verbal communication. It gets interpreted in the same way that a verbal communication would be interpreted by the receiver of the message. So your gestures are telling something to the members. They are able to tell when you are saying she's talking nonsense. Your non-verbal communication will tell. When you look at each other and smile, when you look at someone and frown, that is non-verbal communication, but it tells how you are thinking and how you are feeling. And the person who is looking at you is able to interpret that in the same way that a verbal communication is interpreted. And that is what Honorable Baba is saying. Karen, Honorable Club.
As the other companies to respond, you see, Chair, the issue of gesture in kind and the delay around issue of attitude which may respond to treatment given to DJY, 39 months and 25 months difference issue and the outstanding thing. You know, I would want you to relate to your response in confirming to Parliament about your credibility of provision of service. How would you rate your a good performance of relations with people you work with and your ethical conduct? I mean, these are basics before you can pay.
But I also would want to zoom in there to that question to say, how do big businesses treat an invoice from a small business in as far as the interest on what is being owed is concerned? I'm saying this because if I default in paying for my car and then I pay the arrears when I have accumulated arrears, those arrears have got an interest. How is an invoice from a small business that is not paid for a period of 39 months is treated in as far as the interest on invoice is concerned, by big companies. The same question would have gone to the 7 months lost by NILA and the months lost by MDP. You can then respond.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'd just like to give feedback with regard to the black economic empowerment of 31% black women ownership. And it's the ownership is owned by Emancipa Investments, Habiba Surti, and the Patini Family Trust. In addition to that, as Ms. Villos said, we need to prove that we were BEE compliant. In addition to that, her request was that we provide letters of good standing as well as tax clearance certificate. And all the information is available here. We'll hand it over to the chairperson as far as that is concerned, proving that Huawei was being fully compliant from the time they requested a have a BEE certificate. In addition to that, all documentation that was required with regard to SME development and enterprise development training, all of that information has been shared with the committee at the previous meeting. But we're more than prepared to share another version, the more latest version, before Friday with your Honourable Chair, so that it can be shared to give you feedback with regard to all the issues, even though some of them are not minuted, but we're more than prepared to share more of the information.
Madam Chair, if I may, just quickly address the CIDB issue. I've actually, while the discussions were going on, logged onto the CIDB website and rechecked, and it does show DigiWire as being active. The point as to why I'm doing that is to show that it's public information. I think there was
Can you hold on there? The issue was not that you should go and check whether they are the certificate was active. She has explained that. The issue was adherence on your side. That if a company that you have contracted has finished work, you are obliged to issue a certificate of completion of work, which then that company submits to CIBD for the company then to get the correct level of rating. So your response does not take us to your responsibility. Your responsibility was not to search whether DigiWire was CIBD compliant. Your responsibility was when they finish the contract worth so much, you issue them with a certificate. Whether they are compliant or not, it's none of your business. Your business is to issue them with the certificate of completion of work. And then she has explained why, without having that, her CIDB certificate was not affected. It's because of the period we are in terms of the economy. So they were given a period of grace. That does not exonerate you from your responsibility of complying with the policies of the country. So you can then respond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As indicated, and I think perhaps for your benefit, this was my submission while you were not in the room, but our view is that we have complied with the regulations, and we have obtained external opinion and views on this, confirming our view in that regard. However, there seems to be a conflicting views on this matter. Mrs. Naidoo and I have concurred that we are more than willing to sit with DigiWire and with the CIDB to ascertain exactly what the situation is and what the requirement is and why there is this, well, what at best I can describe as a confusion. Because from our perspective, we have provided everything we have to provide. We have external legal opinion confirming that we have complied with the regulations and with the law. yet on the other hand, we have aversion to say that you didn't give us what you're supposed to give us, and as a result, we were deregistered. So we are more than willing to sit and meet with the CIDB in DigiWise presence and clarify this to get to the bottom of it. If it's simply a checkpoint issue or a clerical issue that needs to be dealt with, we are more than happy to do that.
If correct, Chair, the intention of the meeting will merely be to clarify. I don't think that it will help this meeting. I would have thought that it would assist if the commitment was to say we will meet with an intention to resolve. Then we are going somewhere. You know, I just thought I must indicate that. But while, because we may be going close to an end, I must also indicate that South Africa is one of those pure countries in the whole world where big business does not pull along small business as it grows. Other countries like Germany, you know, etc., they are proud of working with small businesses who manufacture car parts, you know, so that they are looking at growing the whole country. If we look at the spirit of the president, that is the spirit where I think big companies should also follow and say, let's support our president. We are not supporting him as a person, but we are supporting the country, that you grow with small businesses. There is no way you will grow without small businesses. It's a false assumption, because you also need a thriving economy to make proper profits. And also tax is another issue, but let me not go there. All I mean is big business. The more we listen, I think the more we get frustrated, because it means we're only getting a tip of the iceberg. What about other big businesses that are not in this room, you know? It means worse things are probably happening. And we're not talking of poor big businesses. We are talking of well-established big businesses. So I just thought, a commitment will do better than to go into another exercise of just a discussion. Thanks, Comrade Chair.
Chair, just a clarifying question as well. I just want to ask from Herman, which finger did she choose when you ask her? She must choose a finger. I just was wondering.
I think you can perhaps raise that question with Ms. Governor directly, because I do not recall anything of the sort. If I can, Madam Chair, through you, consider the commitment given.
Honourable Chair.
Yes, thanks, Chair. I'm not going to be long, but I just obviously Ms. Governor has raised a lot of issues which go way beyond the nature of the contract. She's raising issues which relate to state procurement, supposed cozy relationships between government and well-connected international corporates that maybe have a political agenda as well as a business agenda. The possible exposure of corrupt practices and collusion and coercion, these sorts of things which often pollute relationships in business, between businesses themselves and between government and business. And I think that it's a topic which this committee would have liked to have interrogated further had we had more time. It seems that something went wrong somewhere in the relationship between DigiWire and Hawaii. And, you know, it would be nice if the conversations that hopefully are going to ensue now can go back to that point. You know, where did we go wrong? And can we try and restore some sort of ex post facto justice I mean, the fact that she's claiming that there were valid claims of over 2 million rands worth of invoices and you're disputing that, that surely can't be that difficult to resolve. I mean, what she's saying is that your systems and documentation and procedures were not up to scratch. She's saying that you lost contracts or you lost work completion or, you lost, there was a period of 6 weeks where work was done that's never been paid for. And, and changes of staff resulted in important documentation going missing. Now, normally it's the other way around. Normally the big business is accusing the small business of not getting its act together. She's saying the reverse. She's also admitted that she's got sort of work documented in emails and WhatsApps and whatnot, but now she's sort of done the invoicing. So I don't think that either one is guilty or not guilty. I think that both sides have got questions to answer in terms of what went wrong and why it went wrong and who was responsible for it going wrong. So I think that what is required is a bit of humility on both sides. Acceptance that there are no easy answers and no simple answers in these sorts of areas of dispute, as we've seen in the other ones that we've heard about this morning. And if it's premised on a desire to solve the problem amicably, then I think there's a chance that it can be resolved. Telkom has some questions to answer, which I hope we will hear from Mr. Mahlangu shortly. And again, it goes back to, does Telkom, as Vodacom has indicated it does, to take responsibility for its supplier relationships and its suppliers, in other words, the supply chain? How far down that chain do you actually take an interest to develop that small business supply chain that Honorable Mabasa was referring to and the chairperson? Because ultimately, this is your responsibility as a state-owned company. I know you have a big incubation program, the Solutions Lab, which is important and good, but ultimately it's in your day-to-day operations that the rubber meets the road, and that's where we need to see a proactive and progressive approach. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Bebo.
No, thanks, Chair. I just want to remind Warwick that will you please give us the time frames? When are you going to sit down and deal with this matter? The commitment. Thank you.
I would want that to come from us to say that we would want to finalize that matter before the 7th of May. Those who thought that because Parliament is rising on the 20th, then the Portfolio Committee will stop to function are making a big mistake. We are still functioning until the 7th of May because the elections are on the 8th of May. So we want that information before the 9th of April because we are planning a meeting to sit on the 9th and 10th to process another serious matter that we cannot leave hanging as this Portfolio Committee. But I want to address just big corporate companies and state-owned enterprises to say, don't look down upon small businesses. They are actually the engine for job creation. If you read the NDP, it says 90% of 11 million new jobs will be created by small businesses, not big companies. Big companies are busy now getting into robotic labor to actually cut out the small businesses. Also, don't think that money is everything. It's not money that makes this world and this country turn around. Those who know the history of this country will understand better that consumer boycott had an effect on companies. Stay away by unions fighting for the rights of the workers who were exploited had enormous effect on the economy and big companies. We don't want small businesses and cooperatives to take that route because we are in a different situation. We are in a situation where we are building the country. We don't want to encourage people to use those approaches. So don't push small businesses too far. Please don't do that. Also, don't push Parliament to a point where Parliament would legislate, because it will not be nice. Try and understand what the laws of this country are saying, and also try and understand the role played by small businesses. Because government will have to tax, to increase tax for big businesses in order to look after people who are not employed, who are absorbed by small businesses. In other countries, shoelaces, when shoes are made, are given to small businesses. In other countries, sticking the bottom sole and the top part of a shoe is done by small businesses who go to the factory and collect pairs of shoes, go home and stick the bottom sole to the upper part of a shoe in order to create jobs and not build prisons. Create jobs and not build prisons in order to deal with poverty, which then results in crime. So the point made by Honorable Mabasa to say is South Africa is a different country where big businesses think that they make the economy turn around and them alone, without state-owned enterprises and without small businesses, without cooperatives, just big privately owned companies can make the turnaround. They are just blinded from the reality of the situation. So the issues that we are dealing with here are common, and the House is about to start. I don't want us to leave this matter as if we are not going to follow it up. We are going to have a meeting to deal with this matter before our cut of time. And all that we are saying on this issue, find a better way of understanding what the issues are. Ms. Gavin is not talking about payment only. It's talking about a number of issues which include relationships between
which I raised.
And then the last issue that we would want to raise relates to the last company that my clan name is African. She arrived here in Cape Town yesterday. She's a small business respecting Parliament, trying to assist and intervene in a matter that may result in NL Green Power. One, creating a conflict in the community in the manner in which that company does not understand issues of social facilitation and stakeholder management. My clan name is African, was brought in to provide social facilitation and stakeholder management for a company issued with a license as one of the independent power producers. Okay? I don't know whether NL Green Power has not been watching what was happening in Colombia. Because from where we sit, we are also not dealing with the issue of refusing to pay this company. NL Green Power is refusing to pay. My clan name is Africa on the basis of the fact that my clan name is African brought in more people instead of bringing a smaller number. And therefore, this company, the big company, is refusing to pay on the basis of the fact that the small company that is doing social facilitation and stakeholder management was not supposed to bring. When you don't understand how South Africa is demarcated in terms of villages and wards and in terms of community structures that exist, you will then, as a big company, say bring in 50 people or bring in 100 people. But the one who is trained in social facilitation would know that will actually create problems because the community is going to be in conflict. And those who have been following what was happening in Colombia, people died because the community was not consulted as it was supposed to be. Why so? Because the company that wanted to mine there had the right to mine. And the company, the community whose assets were going to be mined had not been properly consulted. And that divided the community because some of the people in the community felt that they are going to support the company mining, and other members of the community felt that that company has got no rights. And people who died, no one died from the big company. People in the community fought. Social facilitation also includes conflict management and conflict resolution because those people are trained on management of stakeholders, ensuring that there is a common understanding and people feel that they are part of the process. Again, I don't think that we have enough time. So what this company, the big company, has done, that they kept quiet, and then only yesterday after 5, they responded to the portfolio committee because to them, they still have this mentality. Who is Parliament? Who is the portfolio committee? What can they tell us? Who is this black woman that she thinks she is clever to take us to Parliament? That is the attitude we always get from big businesses, instead of subjecting themselves to a learning process. So we want to apologize, because we are not going to ask you to present anything, because the people that were supposed to be here, for us to then engage with them, to hear their side of the story, we heard your side of the story. And for us to educate them and tell them that they are playing with fire, if they think that by having those licenses as independent power producers to generate energy and refuse to be guided by people who understand community development, social facilitation, and stakeholder management on how you engage communities, they may find themselves one day not being able to generate energy in those communities if they refuse to be taken through this process. So we are going to write that to them. And if we can't find time to engage with them before the 7th of May, we will make a recommendation to the 6th Parliament for them to look into these matters from a broader perspective, not the issue of you were supposed to bring in 100 people and you brought in 300 people, because that is not the issue. The issue is proper consultation of the community so that the project does not divide the community. So I really apologize to you, and should we need to you to come, we would then ensure that your cost of coming here as a small business is taken care of by Parliament, because we have kept you here, and the people that were supposed to engage with us to deal with matters that you have raised, understanding the social, political conditions on the ground, which may make a big company not to achieve what it thinks it would achieve if social facilitation and community consultation has gone wrong. We value the work that you are doing, because you are protecting, you are preventing conflict within a community. And that is what needs to be valued, and you need to be respected. In actual fact, that big company should have allowed you to guide them on how best to consult communities. So, thank you very much. I declare the meeting closed.